Hello, my name is Brandy Hofer, your host and founder of Color Me Happy, a community podcast and book, all of which I started in my in-home studio whilst in the throes of motherhood. I am an artist, author, educator, and mother to three beautiful boys. We live and create together in our in-home studio that is tucked away in the quiet Canadian prairies. Our podcast and community was built to empower and inspire. We chat about everything from motherhood, the art world, business, and health in the most honest and authentic way. It's totally unedited and unfiltered. If you love what we do here, become a part of our free community, Color Me Happy. We have grown the community to support our members with features and interviews. Our link is in the notes. Thank you for being here. I sure do appreciate your time. Welcome to Color Me Happy podcast. My name is Brandy Hofer, your host. Thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited because this guest is one cool cat, Frances. Frances Berry. This is going well. My kid's running in the background. If you're watching, you can see that. If you're listening, just so you know. In this podcast, I love it so much because we chatted about like limiting beliefs in the art world and what a supposed artist looks like, but really when you challenge those boundaries, when you push those limiting beliefs and let them go, how you feel empowered and to take on a path that is for you, because turns out I can podcast at home with my kids around because they love this camera. I'm really excited for you to listen in, check it out, because Frances is a downright badass, and I own a lot, not a lot. I kind of look at it so much that I wish I owned extra pieces, and I will one day collect them, but pushing those boundaries, remember always to push those boundaries and be who you are and be unapologetic about it, because you'll just, you know, age and... Good sentence, Brandy. You'll just age and you won't regret it. You won't regret taking the reins and being unapologetic about your artwork and who you are and what you want to do and choosing your own path. So, you know what? Check out our weekly inspiration newsletter where I can write down what I'm trying to say right now and not semi-distracted by my children. As is the rest of my life. I hope everyone's doing okay and holding it together. Spring is almost here, so keep on trucking every day and seeing your everyday ordinary as extraordinary and just be that badass self that you can, because what have you got to lose? You only have today. And thanks for being here. And we wouldn't be here without our... For fuck's sakes, this is so hard. Get lost, you guys. BioClean Disaster Services, Nouveau Laser and Aesthetic Center, which I am going to get a tattoo removed next week, so I'm excited about that. Long story for another day, tattoos. And Oasis Hot Yoga and Spin Studio, Red Bicycle Communications, and I think maybe I said Oasis Hot Yoga and Spin Studio, probably. Thank you to our partners. We couldn't do this without you, and we couldn't do this without our listeners, you. So thanks for being here. Feel free to reach out anytime and share what you're working on in our Color Me Happy community. Get in there, because we just threw in a new thing on Fridays, a weekly art challenge. So our art challenge this week will be based on the work of Frances Berry, and it's super fun and a really cool style to just dive into. Thanks for being here.
Bye. Pardon the incognito look, but this is me most days. And I did just get back in town from Vegas last night. And I forgot that I scheduled this. I was like, I've known I was going to Vegas for a minute now. And when we scheduled it, I didn't stop to think about the fact that, like, I mean, it's not that I was there for work, right? Like, I wasn't there partying or doing anything like that. But I traveling just, I hate.
When you come back with sunglasses on, it looks like you went to Vegas.
I wear sunglasses every day. Okay. It's ridiculous. My sunglass problem indoors is very real.
Do you have blue eyes?
I have gray eyes.
Gray eyes. Oh, so you're like really sensitive to light.
Like,
yeah.
I get migraines all the time. People think I'm trying to be bougie, and I'm like, no. This is like a...
My head fucking hurts.
Yeah, like if I that and my, right now my eyes are like my eyes are puffy. I do not travel well. I'm like one of those people that probably needs compression socks and shit like that. And I hate it. I looked over at my husband yesterday and he was sound asleep. And I'm just sitting there making notes about Derrida and ontology because why the hell not? So how are you?
Good. I'm so glad to meet you. I am framing your artwork now that came in the mail. And I'm so excited.
Which, by the way, when I saw you, it's one of the only times I've ever seen anybody unbox things. And, you know, there's one of our big core beliefs around here is that there's always a better way to do something. Always. Like, we never rest on something we're doing, and we never hesitate to think that it can't be improved. Watching you unroll yours, I'm like, we've managed to get it there safely, which, believe it or not, people don't realize that, like, when you're,
it's, you know, really hard.
Getting artwork to people safely is so difficult because, you know, a lot of the stuff I make is on paper. Like,
hold on, you can't vacuum when I'm in a podcast. You can vacuum.
Is that that's your husband?
Stop it. I'm serious.
Is this your husband?
Yeah. So,
oh my God. Do not discourage him from helping ever. Okay. Never vacuum away, husband. We'll get the telemetry stuff out of the way.
Keep vacuuming. Exactly.
Never discourage them from doing things ever. I swear with mine, I'm just like, God, I love my husband so much. He's like the most wonderful person I know. But at the end of the day, I need a wife.
I know. You can hire those. I have cleaners, but it doesn't help.
Like, you can't, I have the most amazing team around here. I do, like, but it's so funny because I grew up in a very traditional house. Like, my mom was a stay-at-home mom. My dad, you know, owned a business, like, but my mom ran that house like a business. And my mom is also my dad's, like, basically his business partner. She does a lot of design. My dad manufactures furniture and she does a lot of design work. And that was actually why I was in Vegas, was I did the trade show display for them. So it's like a one-stop family shop. But it's so funny because, like, I was trying to explain to my mom one time, this was like early on in my marriage, that she said something about me cooking dinner for my husband. And I was like, Mom, would you ever ask Dad to come and cook you dinner after a day at work? Would you do that? And she was like, no. And I'm like, well, then maybe don't ask me to.
Yeah.
Don't ask me to do it. Like, I work 12 hours a day. I'm not trying to cook dinner most nights.
No, like, you have like zero left to give. What were you going to say about packaging though? You were thinking about like changing something?
No. So watching you unbox something though, it was so tight and I was like, she can't even unroll it proper because that's when paper tears real fast.
Especially. Oh my gosh.
And I was like watching you undo it and it kept coming, curling back on you. And I was like, please don't tear. So I've been instructing everyone, looser rolls, just looser, a little bit looser. There was room in the thing. We've also ordered some bigger tubes so that it can be a smaller roll or a bigger, like, looser roll. So, I mean, that's making sure that people feel like what they're getting is worth the money they spent, you know, and a lot of that has to do with the packaging of something. And packaging is freaking expensive. People don't realize, like, we want to get custom stuff done and, like, we'd be tacking on probably an extra 5 or 10% to every piece that I ship. Just shipping costs alone are ridiculous because I insure everything. So what are you gonna do? Yeah, we're figuring it out. But I appreciate the unboxing because I was like, have y'all been rolling all of these?
I knew better. And I knew as soon as I took it to my framers that she has the weights so to hold it. But I also just wanted to, like, I really wanted to capture it because I was so excited to get it.
I love that piece. Moment. That's one of my favorite things I've
so
ever
good.
Read. So
good. Yeah, I love all your pieces. I would just, like, when people are like, I don't know if I have the space. Like, I don't have the space, but I still fit in new art.
You'd be amazed at how many of my customers are like that are like, I would say that my... you know, I'm a big believer in the 80-20 rule, and that, like, you know, 20% of your work is responsible for 80% of the output. A lot of people flip that and do it the reverse, But same thing can go for customers. 20% of my clients are responsible for 80% of my profit. Just there's mm-hmm. no way around it. It is one of those things that's a pretty much a universal 80-20 is it works. It does. Like if you break down anything, and most of my customers, I would say on average have bare minimum three pieces. Like they keep buying stuff, but they're like, we don't have room for it. We're just going to put it somewhere.
Yeah. I teach a custom artwork class and I say your return customer is your best customer.
Oh yeah. Building relationships are essential. I want my customers to know, and I genuinely mean this, how thankful I am for each and every one of them, from the smallest to the biggest. It does not matter. The people who give me their hard-earned money for something that doesn't feed them, it doesn't clothe them, doesn't put a roof over their head, right? But they give me their hard-earned money to hang something on their wall that's going to make them smile or make them happy. It's going to make their room come together. It's, you know, that's a really incredible feeling. And I think that I want to make sure that nobody ever thinks I think that they're not important or that I'm ever too big to like talk to somebody, because at the end of the day, who the fuck am I? Right.
Yeah. Like, yeah. So 100%. I totally agree with you. And I think a lot of people should go by that belief. Truly, we would just live in a better world. Okay, so it sounds, I want to kind of start from the beginning. It sounds like, so your parents are business owners. So, and did you go to art school?
Yeah, I have my BFA from Alabama.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I've been creative my whole life, right? But I went to a very small school. There was one art class that you got to maybe get into if you were lucky. I have a lot of
point
really creative.
And you did some point perspective.
100%. my mom is an interior designer, commercial designer. My uncles and my grandfather are all engineers. And then the rest of my family is entrepreneurs and businessmen and salesmen. And so like I grew up around a lot of creativity, right? But I got to Alabama and I thought I wanted to be an interior designer, mainly because like I knew I was creative, but I by no means thought I could hack it in the art department. I didn't feel like an artist when I got to college, right? But it took all of one semester as an interior design major to realize I am not an interior designer. I mean, it was so bad. Like we would have our, you know, you'd go into your class, they have like a warm-up exercise. You have to like tape your paper down and like T-squares and triangles and stuff. Man, the class would be done and I'd still be trying to get my paper straight on the desk. The struggle was very real. They basically were like, you don't belong here. We think you'd be a better fit in the art department. So it's just like general studio stuff, right? And never knew that pencils came in different weights. Had no clue until my like sophomore year. Like it wasn't until I took figure drawing my junior year that I like really was like, okay, I could do this. And then I took a photography class my senior year, spent the next 8 years taking photographs or you know, something like that, 8-ish years. And, considered myself a photographer. And then I got to grad school and I realized like, God, like there's so many photographs out there that they all just sort of seemed equally unimportant. I understood that if I wanted to continue in that realm, I needed to either elevate what I was doing, like in regards to like perhaps like the way I exhibited or like any sort of installation work, or maybe somehow liberating the image from just a like take a picture, print a picture, hang a picture. You know, it just seems very just archaic almost, right? Not that there's not amazing photos out there, amazing photographers. I know a couple of them, but I just didn't feel passionate or connected. So I literally sold all my cameras my first semester of graduate school. I got rid of all of them. I was just like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'd only been making art as a photographer, like ever. I'd never really finished any real drawings or real paintings or any. I failed the one painting class I took in undergrad. And I started making like digital imagery that was sort of like a conceptual critique of photography. So keep in mind, this is eight years ago now. Maybe 10 years ago, actually. And I I made my first few projects and immediately got a lot of fanfare, like immediately. I uploaded them to a few places. The Guardian did a really great piece on them. Harper's Bazaar Singapore commissioned me to do a thing about Singapore or whatever, doing my style on images they gave me. And suddenly, whoa, the fame, fame.
You're the coolest.
I felt very cool. I was writing, 90-page papers with, tons of 42 syllable words and all the word salad art jargon that made me sound very impressive. And I just didn't believe it. I've tried so desperately. I wanted so desperately to buy into that person because that was the person I thought artists were. That was who I thought, that's what I thought would make me feel like I had achieved something maybe. And the more and more, the further I got into that, the more and more I felt like it wasn't even imposter syndrome. I knew I was an imposter. I knew what I was doing I didn't believe in. And there's a lot of things that an art career can withstand, but dishonesty is not one of them. Because what we do is inherently honest. It's a it is at its core who we are. We put it out there for the world to see, and we accept the fact that there's going to be people that take a shit on it. It's a lot easier to withstand that criticism when it's something that is you believe in, when it's something that's based in maybe principle at the very least. And I realized that one of my things my mom raised me with, which sticks with me constantly, all the words I write are things that mom has said to me, but they're just my version of them. That popularity breeds insincerity. It just does. There's just no way around it, because the more popular you get, the more insincere you have to be to maintain that popularity, because people are at their core vastly different from each other. Right. So if you suddenly find yourself in a position where everyone is clapping for you and you're getting nothing but yeses, you're probably maybe in some great, doesn't mean there aren't people who everybody loves. My husband's one of them. Everybody loves him. I'm not suspicious of him. But when it comes to art, it's like at a certain point, there's like a fulcrum moment in which that popularity goes into kind of almost like a sycophant sort of situation where people are either that or fear, like people are too afraid to say they don't like your work, right? Because they don't want to be on the out. And I just have no interest in that. And I realized that when I was in France in 2017. I had moved my work from kind of more two-dimensional stuff. I started making installation work. And I built this thing called the memory machine, which I still very much believe in. And I do think I will resurface one day. But I was having to give an artist lecture on, being a Southern artist in France and all that, and I'm speaking to this crowd and I've got a translator. So I'm having to say one sentence and then listen to them translate in one sentence. So I had a lot of time to think in that moment, right? Because normally when you're giving a speech or lecture or whatever, you do 20-minute speech, question, answer.
Blackout.
Yeah, you do. You go on autopilot 100%. But having someone there, like only being able to say two or three sentences at a time at best, and then having to sit there for 15 seconds each time. It's like every 15-second interval that passed, I was like, I hate this. I hate this, and I don't believe it. And I'm talking about it like it's scientific, like there's something that's very real about it. And people are nodding their heads and I don't believe it. I am very clever and I came up with some very clever words. And that is what became abundantly, I was like, I felt cool. I felt like the work I was making was neat, but I just did not feel attached to it. I started having some pretty severe disassociative moments in that. Now I just like, I can't live my life this way. I can't do that. And pretty much I'd been painting and drawing sort of on the side this whole time. And I really was like, all I wanted to do was that. All I wanted to do was just have like a hunk of charcoal in my hand on a piece of paper and just let my hand do what my mind didn't even know what it was going to do, right? And I got home from France and just was like, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not doing the rest of this anymore. And there's a lot of people that probably would say that was a stupid career move. Because it took me, I literally at the age of 32 or 33 decided I'm going to be a painter now. I'm going to be just, I've been calling myself a picture maker for as long as I can remember, because photographer never felt right. So, you know, Frances Berry picture maker just sort of stuck, and it works, right? Although it's not going to work when I eventually move into sculpture.
That's so great.
That wasn't too many tangents. I'm prone to that.
No, I love hearing it. And I connect to what you're saying with, and let's call it the art world or media in general. There's like a snobbiness around it, and I don't like it at all.
Well, there's enough, in my opinion, the reason why, you know, I get told a lot, you don't charge enough for your work. You don't, you know, and I'm like, number one, don't tell me what to do. That's one. I don't like that at all. Even when my husband tells me to be safe when I leave the house, I'm like, don't tell me what to do. it's something in my core. Anything that somebody thinks they know better than me, I find infuriating. But I think that there's enough stuff out there that's not for everybody, right? How many things there are? And I reckon everybody, you know, is like, well, nobody's going to, if you saturate the market too much with your work, because it's not like a braggy thing. It's just a statement of fact. I sell a lot of work, right? But one of the things I pride myself on is, yes, I do have the print shop that's like a third party printer through the website that prints stuff. So anything that comes through there obviously is a print, right? But the vast, vast majority of everything I make is one of a kind. It might have the same phrase on it, might have the same sentiment, or somebody wants the same color palette. But one thing I always tell people is I do not replicate my work. So like if somebody owns a piece that you love, you need to talk to them, one, or I can maybe do something that's like a sort of close bedfellow, but you're not gonna get somebody else's art without going to them. That's the whole beauty of it, right? Like I'm not pumping out work.
No, you're not a robot. You're a human making a human creation. I've had that happen too. Like, and they're like, I love this. Can you make, I'm like, I can't, I've even tried it and it doesn't work. It's absolutely impossible.
I can't mimic other artists, much less myself. Come on now. I was so shit in the, like when you're in undergrad and they make you do the master drawings, right? They're like copy Cezanne or something. And I'm over there, like, just like drawing circles. I just suck at that kind of stuff. I would like to think that like I am in the most romantic sense of being an artist, I feel like a visual historian of our time, right? We're filter feeders. If we're being honest with what we're doing, then we are quite literally vehicles for the time to move through. You know, every time I make something, I think of, that's every time I make something that's mine, you know, it's not a commission, because that's ultimately somebody else is using the gear. Me, right? Like somebody else doing the driving. But anytime I do something like on my own, I very quickly see that like it is, I am acting as like an interpreter for now. And I think my head always goes back to what's his name? Artisan. It's a painting called Meat Stall. It was during the Protestant Reformation, or one of them, or one of those religious wars that happened, in which there was a ton of iconography in it, right? Because, you know, you have the vast majority of people who can't read, only the clergy can read. And so they were the layering, every painting was layered with meaning. Everything, every object had a meaning, and it's so that moment in time. And so I'd like, not that I'm elevating myself to the level of self-importance to think my paintings will last 500 years, but let's say they do, right? Let's say they do. And then 2700 or whatever it is that people are 2500 that people are looking at this work and dissecting it, running parallel to our text that we have. So and I think that was that is very, very much essential in all of this, which again is why I didn't like what I was doing before, because it felt like such a lie. It felt like so shitty to do to mankind, to like lie to them about what was happening at the moment. Being political.
Yeah, I think that's so great that you're just yourself and you present yourself that way. And I find it impossible to do the lie. I find it absolutely.
I try. And I really
try. In fact, I know.
It would have been way like
I came across another female art consultant, and she was like, We met for like 2 hours. I don't even know how I sat there for 2 hours. I was like, I think I was in shock. And she's like, there's no way if you're presenting yourself as a mother artist that you'll ever succeed in the art world. No
people like that. This.
Yeah, you know, no gallery like, will represent you. And I was like, I'm represented by three galleries currently. See, right now as we speak.
I'm not represented.
What do you mean?
I have no representation.
That's
I've never.
Great. You don't even need. You don't need that. You don't. Well,
some are, look, my thing is I have Aaron. So Aaron is my studio
artist for you.
Aaron is one of the best human beings that ever existed. She, I hired her after a series of not great experiences with studio assistants. And I hired her on. She was managing a strip club in Memphis before COVID. Then COVID hit. And I knew her through a mutual friend. And Aaron is just such a hustler. I mean, we're talking about this girl is the hardest worker I know. She was the stimulus money ran out and she was like, I gotta do something to pay my bills. So she was like cleaning houses. She started cleaning my house. And about after the second time, I was like, you're way too good at this to do just this. You are so, she was thinking of things that like, I didn't even ask her to do. And I was like, you wanna come work for me? And she came on and has been with me ever since. It's like my work wife. It's my better half. I consider her my representation. And after we've been together for almost 3 years now. And she is now starting her own business, There's just nothing fucking cooler in the world than because we forget sometimes that we are very much like a feminist operation around here. Like, mm-hmm. We don't have a no nuts policy, but like, we are very much a lady situation. Although we do have Anthony. We love Anthony, and Anthony is gay. So it's not, we love him as well. He's the studio assistant. And he's amazing. He's this incredible, like, budding photographer. But Aaron, though, is who is out there getting me my money daily.
Yeah.
Right. And she gets paid handsomely as well. I always joke about it being my own little socialist state around here. If I win, everybody's winning, right? Like, it's not like I'm over here Scrooge McDucking in money. No.
But I like how you called it a no nuts policy. My friend runs a marketing firm, and she doesn't mean to, but she also runs a no nuts policy.
Mine was unintentional, but what I realized was is that like, okay, so my grandmother, very much a second wave feminist through and through. We're talking burning bras in Mississippi in the 50s. Like, this woman was a powerhouse. She just passed away in December. She's one of my favorites. Actually, I have a giant, mind the trash over there, but I have a giant portrait of her.
Aww.
Painted on my wall.
So great.
And it says for all the bad bitches of yore, this one's for you. But it's so true. Like, I think about my grandmother daily and that she did so that I could, right? She knew she wasn't ever gonna see any of the like her hard work pay off. So one of the things, I got chill bumps just thinking about it. And the even crazier about that portrait is that that portrait of her is actually my Aunt Frances, who I'm named after. Her and my grandmother were college roommates. She's not my aunt. My mom named her after her, named me after her because she was like, when you were born, I thought, who's the coolest person I know? And she named me after Frances because she was like, my Aunt Frances was the coolest person I knew. And my Aunt Frances was an artist in the 50s in Mississippi. She was so insanely talented. When we say so insanely talented, but she went to an all-girls college in Mississippi and got told basically like, you can't be an artist. That's weird. Nobody, you can't be an artist. You need to get married. So when she got married immediately out of college. And just she's kept painting, but not the way that she could have. And so like the portrait that she painted of my grandmother, I enlarged to put on my wall, literally to remind me I have nothing. There's nothing standing in my way except for the uses I make for myself and the shit that if you go looking for anything hard enough, you're going to find it kind of thing. So like, if I want to look at every situation through the lens of like, oh, the patriarchy is squashing me, right? I probably could find that anywhere I wanted to. You can interpret situations a million different ways, but that is a constant reminder that even if that is the thing, even if the reason I did not get picked for something is because I am a woman, I'm sure as shit not going to buy into that, because what a defeatist kind of mentality that is. And not only that, but it's
absolutely
such a disservice to the women I love the most in the world, who even my own, my mother got married at 19. My grandmother was a grandmother at 41. My mom was a grandmother at 47. I'm 38 years old and I just got married a couple of years ago. But that's largely because of them. They wanted me to be whatever it is I wanted to be. And I think about that quite a bit. I got asked recently in an interview, what female artists of the past would I have in my studio if I could? And, you know, in my head, I thought, you know, you've got your handful that like are the go-tos, right? Like, I've always loved Virginia Woolf. One of the most influential things I've ever read was Virginia Woolf, A Room of One's Own. It's one of the greatest things ever. Specifically, chapter 6 is truly great. But in it, she talks about a couple of things that have stayed with me and are probably very much part of my foundation. And that is like an androgynous mind is needed in order to pursue any creative endeavor. You have to be able to empathize with your male counterparts, right? You have to be able to see the humanity in everyone. And the other, you know, obviously you need a room of your own and you need money to do things. But it's also, she talks about Shakespeare's sister, like this fictional character, Judith Shakespeare, like, right? Like how many women went to their graves that were, you know, Michelangelo or Shakespeare? How many women died never being able to pursue that what I have in me?
Mm.
We've only had this for such a limited, people have no, we, one thing that makes me quite angry with modernity in general is this like constant urge to, there's always something better, right? When I do believe there is always something, we can do more for each other. We can love each other more. We can be more peaceful. We can evolve. But at the same time, though, we are flawed as mankind goes, right? We are flawed at our core animals. And I think that I feel like we've only enjoyed this period of true liberation as women for a very short period of time. And I'm starting to see a lot of it erode in a lot of ways. And that is truly upsetting to me. And I don't really know what to do about it. I see my niece's TikTok and her advertisements for girdles and things, corsets and things that we as women decided that we did not need how long ago. And to watch us just put ourselves back in chains is like the shittiest thing ever. Because as you can see, I am quite androgynous in myself. I am very much embracing my womanhood, but I don't think about it on the daily. I'm just a person who wants to do cool shit. And I don't want to have to think about my vagina all the time. And you're a mother. I would imagine it's doubly so for being a mom, because we're trying to have a baby right now. And that's another thing that nobody tells you as a powerful, strong woman, right? You're being raised by all these amazing women. Nobody ever stops to be like, you can't have everything. The lie is that we can. Mm. And I've spent.
It's really fucking hard.
Well, just tell you. I want a baby. I've wanted a baby for a minute. I want to be a mother. I've always known I wanted to be a mother. I have an immense, like, we're going to adopt if we can't conceive. But it was one of those things that felt so cruel when I sort of realized it, that like, I've done everything I was supposed to do. Everything. I went to school. I went to school again. You know, I did all of these things. And nobody ever tells you you're going to wake up one day and you're going to be in your mid-30s and suddenly you're a geriatric pregnancy. You know, if you do get pregnant. Meanwhile, my husband is 5 years younger than me. So, and a smoke show. Woo!
There you go. You win.
But that's the thing, is like, I'm looking around. It's almost like the more I want to get pregnant, the more everyone around me is getting pregnant.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's,
I really don't. We don't
like, and people are like, don't think about it. And you're like, but then if you want, not it, like,
it's hard not to, right? Like all it's like you natural think about. End of sex is a baby, hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So no. Do you have one? Do you have more than one?
I have three boys.
Shut up. That's so funny. My dad literally, and I swear, so my dad used to be a drug addict and an alcoholic, and then gave it up cold turkey when my brother and I came along. And he kind of replaced it with religion and exercise. He was a bodybuilder in the 80s, and like, he is a very like heady dude. So when I say religion, I mean like, him and I talk about the universe and like the humanity. We talk about the vibrations we feel, but I speak to him about it in biblical terms because that's what he has, that's what, how he understands.
He's adapted. Yeah.
And so I recognized that a long time ago, that my dad and I are the same human being. We feel everything and everyone around us. We have an immense concern for things that like maybe we can't even help with, which drives us crazy because I'm a believer that empathy without action is just rot. Mm. It is, it's almost a cruelty. If you can feel compassion and empathy and you do fuck all about it, well then you're a bad person, right?
Yeah.
So that's one of the first things I do. And I don't mean to say people are bad people. God, it's like, that's the other thing with making art today. I don't even feel like I can actually be honest in my artwork. Not that I'm like some sort of, I have some sort of raging, like antisocial behavior that I'm keeping at bay. It's just that even the minutia of just being an imperfect human is scrutinized so extensively that I often feel as though I have my foot on the gas and the brake at the same time, all day, every day, all pushed down to the floor. I feel like I am just spinning my wheels because I have yet to really find the courage to truly be myself. Like in this space with you, and I, even though I know that this is going to be something available to the public, right? I still feel, it's like, I feel like a bit more comfortable having a conversation rather than just putting something out there and putting, this is how I feel, right? Because of, I guess, context. But even in today's heightened, I feel like everybody is a, you know, the neighbor in Bewitched, the one that looks through the blinds all the time. I feel like everybody is that neighbor these days. Just like looking through the blinds, waiting for something to happen, waiting for some reason to pounce. And it's really fucking hard to make artwork in that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's, and I guess you just have to shut it off almost and just,
well, except
do you.
I don't know about and, you. I don't know if you've received any sort of, like, it's like drive-by sucker punching from online people. I don't know.
I have.
It's fucking awful. And I'm the type of person that, what they don't realize, and what makes me maybe the angriest is what they don't realize is it something that maybe took them 20 minutes or 10 minutes to write will affect me for the next 6 fucking weeks, right?
Yeah, like, not even. It was probably like 11 seconds because they for sure did it without thinking.
And it will seriously, I'm the type of person, it's only been really recently, and it's only because I have Aaron and my husband and one of my very best friends in the world, Stacey Keel. I don't know if you follow her on Instagram, but you should give her a follow. She is the most amazing person. And she, thank God I have great people around me that like discourage my more my baser emotions, let's call them, right? My tendency, you know, my urge to react, because I think that's in all of us. And I think it takes a great deal of restraint to sit with something for a second. Because at my core,
they say it's 4 seconds, like 4 beats.
Oh, I need, I need 4 or 5 days.
Yeah, to cool down.
I go through like a grief cycle when I get something like that right. It's like the denial and acceptance and finally, you know, all of that jazz. I hate feeling like I can't defend myself, which I think most people do. And then I hate feeling defensive at all, especially when something that's been being leveled at me is so untrue.
Mm.
Right? These are people who do not know me, who are trying to goad me into something, right? And my urge is to be like, if you just got to know, if you just knew me, you probably wouldn't say that. And then I go through like a wave of, I feel so bad for this person because something in them is so deeply broken that made
absolutely
them, right? And then I get mad at myself, like fuck you, Francis. Like, no, do not feel bad for them. They said something, and I'm like, no, Francis. That's like, I'm this internal, I sound like I've got multiple personalities, but it is, it's like a constant struggle between like, I want to be myself. I want to be able to ignore the criticism, and it does not matter how much love you get. The one ugly thing that gets said, just, it's so shattering, because especially when I'm not even out here making anything that's political necessarily. I do that deliberately. It's not me avoiding the topics. I do it because I think there's enough of that. I think sometimes the most generous and most charitable and most compassionate thing that can be done in a moment of extreme tension, whenever a new outrage surfaces, is to be silent, because there is enough sound in the frequencies, and there's nothing being done about anything because too many people are shouting too many different things. So to just be silent is a thing that I feel is the most, I mean, that's a deliberate choice. To maybe even not be silent, but to go about saying something in a way that's not polarizing immediately, or in a way where a lot of different people can hear what I'm saying, because I truly genuinely believe that the vast majority of people are decent people. And I think that anytime I'm having a disagreement with somebody, I literally do my level best to assume their very best intentions. But I don't feel like that courtesy is extended a lot of times. And I just feel like if that's one thing I could like help other people to see, is to like, if we were to just assume the best of each other, you probably would see that though you disagree, that if the person you're disagreeing with, they want their kids to be healthy and happy. They want to have a sense of security. They want the same things you want. So a lot more people have in common than they don't. We've all felt fear and sadness and pain and jealousy. We've all felt these things. We all know what it is to feel envious or boastful. We know the ugliest parts of ourselves. And so to like scream at each other over such, like almost even, a lot of times it becomes almost superficial, and there's like this moral superiority that certain people assign themselves. And once they do, there's no conversation mm-hmm. add because mm-hmm. you are a morally inferior being that cannot be spoken to. So
yeah, I talk about this, and I've talked about it live, and I call it, and I wrote a book too, and I in a chapter in my book, and it's called Nobody Cares. Nobody cares.
I love because
you. Nobody cares because,
wait, you read a book and you've got three boys?
Yeah, I did. I got actually out. I burnt you out. This is a long story. You need to write a book. This is a long story. I made so many pieces of art in 1 year that I burnt out really hard. And so then all I could do was write.
I wrote a lot.
You should put it in a book.
I'm actually working. I've got two at the moment.
There
I'm
you
working.
Go. One. Anyway, it's Nobody Cares. And it's everyone's got so much shit going on in their own lives. And you just gotta stick to being your absolute best self. And focus on that. And I worked with this CEO of like our health foundation. We're doing a 3,000 square foot mural, but it's for truth and reconciliation. And it's so a huge project that means a lot to a lot of people. But she's like,
you're Canadian? I forget that, right?
I am Canadian. Yeah.
American, Native American stuff. Yeah.
Right. Indigenous culture in our area. So
my husband's Comanche. So he cares weirdly very little, even though his grandfather was a number. I'm like, or great grandfather was a number. I'm like, bro, like, let's look into this. I mean, you know, it's like,
let's see where you came from.
Yeah, right.
Like what, like your history. Like, yeah, it's interesting.
Hardcore too, past a certain point.
So. Well, there's a lot of trauma, right? 7 generations, 143 years of trauma in Canada. I'm not sure the United States history.
Oh, well,
so anyway,
the United States is right there with it.
Yeah, we're doing this huge project and a very sensitive topic. And Stephanie, who I work with, she's amazing. And she's like, we're never going to please everyone.
Ever.
We're never, ever going to please anyone.
Like
as long as we know, and I love her. As long as we know in our heart of hearts that we're doing our best and we are trying to help people, then that's all that matters.
You can withstand any criticism at that point. However, my thing that terrifies me these days is that a handful of people can bring down a lifetime of work instantly.
Oh my gosh.
It's
terrifying. I know it's easy to say that, but it's hard to take, right?
The thing that kills me the most is that anybody could take away any of my success because I have worked. I don't think people, I mean, I have worked so hard to get here. We can talk about this as a whole nother section probably.
Because I feel like we could talk a really long time.
Huh?
I feel like we could talk a really long
time. We really could. And I don't think anybody would ever have the interest to listen to. Because at the end of the day, I really do remind myself every morning, you don't matter. I'm literally, and people are like, oh, that's so depressing. You matter. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. Like, that is something that liberates me. It sets me free. It allows me to exist and know that I don't matter. So I'm free to do as I please. Because at the end of the day, like, really, like, ultimately, my husband's a scientist, so he regularly reminds me that, like, this will all be dust.
Thanks.
I'm like, wow, not that my existential crises were not happening regularly enough. Now it's just like rapid fire. But when you kind of look at it that way, like, very little survives the test of time. Very, very little. So I want to make sure that while I'm here, that a lot of people get to at least experience, if not enjoy, what it is that I am doing. Because I recognize that when I'm gone, it might end up in an attic or in a yard sale or in the dumpster, you know? So a lot of people get mad at me because I'm like not concerned with like the archival process of my work and stuff like that. And I'm just like, I want to be able to make something at a price point in which as many people as possible can enjoy it. Right. And if the second you start getting into archival papers and framing things and doing all of that, you limit your output immensely because it's expensive shit. Like, it's so expensive. And you know this, like, it is, it's just, I don't know. I want to make stuff on cocktail napkins. I drew on the back of my ticket, my boarding pass. I actually got a paper boarding pass drawn on back of that. Like, I love it. I mean, anytime I can make anything, I'm real, real happy about that. And if somebody can give me a little bit of money to do it, then that's awesome too.
There's also a balance between like that and charging enough to like get by. Like, you're not giving stuff away for $10, right? Like,
No.
Right?
No.
There's a balance of like charging your worth.
I don't mean to make it sound like I'm...
You're not. It's a good, like, you gotta find the sweet spot. I think it takes
actually found out,
experience.
I'm trying to actually, one of the things I'm really eager to do, because I have such big ideas that are going to take a lot of time. And I'll show you two of the things that I've been working on for a long time that I don't
put
online, because I'm not really looking for other people's feedback. And that's another thing I think a lot of artists need to realize is that, like, you don't have to show everybody everything. I show people what I want to show them. I keep some things to myself because I recognize they are not in a form yet to be talked about. And if they are talked about by a bunch of people who I don't know, the possibility of letting one of those people affect how I feel about it is very real. And I just, I don't need that. I don't need it at all. So I think that is just crazy important to realize it, just because the internet is there and there are people on the other side of it, which I have only just now realized. For the longest time, I thought I was shouting into the abyss. I was like, we were walking through the airport yesterday and somebody started waving at me and walking up to me. And I was panicking because I was like, I don't know this person. Maybe I do though. I don't know this person. She was like, I just commissioned a piece from you and I love it. It's amazing. And I'm like, oh, God, I don't know you face to face, but yeah. You're amazing. But
I don't have to know your name.
I wear this hat everywhere I go. So it's not like it's hard to recognize me necessarily. Yeah. I'm always rocking these sunglasses. So, that felt pretty, actually pretty rad. I don't know.
Yeah. That's cool. I love that.
My husband gets so over the top whenever anybody recognizes me anywhere. Like, somebody will be like, are you Waris Francis? And in my head, I'm thinking, God, I don't want to have to be like, yeah, because it sounds so like, yes, you know? And my husband's like, yeah, this is her.
Hey, everyone.
I mean, if I had to take a guess, if you're happily married, your husband's your number one fan too.
He's supportive and I'll take it. He's not like...
My husband talks about me in a way that I'm like, you've got to quit talking about me.
He does. He's peeking up right now. He's stretching on the floor in like this outfit, but he's just like doing whatever he can to catch my attention.
How long have you been?
We've been together since 2006. So pretty, since I was 19. Yeah, a long time.
Wow.
So, but I love it. He's really supportive. Like I can go, since we've been together, like we did long distance for 2 years. I've done artist residencies. Like, and there's no question about like, if anyone's like, you know, our relationship's in peril or anything, like if you want to do something for a month and a half, well, now we have three kids, so it's like harder. Well,
my husband's gone half the year. So
yeah, like
everybody, just, everybody's like, cause he is a very beautiful, my husband is just, I don't mean to talk about like that. It's the one thing that I probably feel an immense amount of weird pride over is like, I'll look at him sometimes and I'm just like, fuck. Like, you are so attractive. But he being gone half the year and being immensely attractive, I've had early on in our relationship, people were like, does that not bother you that he's gone? He could be doing anything. And I'm like, he would never betray this. He never would, not in a million years, because what we have is so solid that like, the thought of that is so funny to me, because the first mental image I get of it is like a girl trying to come at him and him just showing her my Instagram for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Be like, you need to see what my wife is doing.
Yeah. Do you know her? You might recognize her. You might
really get a piece of her artwork.
Yeah.
Exactly.
No.
What he would do. He's that.
Totally.
I have an amazing father. I'm very fortunate to have just a lot of really amazing people who raised me, men and women both, strong, very strong women, very capable, powerful women who never took a back seat to anybody, and very, very respectful, kind, loving, but also powerful, strong men who took charge when they needed to, who my father has always, I mean, this man does not make a decision about the shoes he's buying, and it's not a whipped version, it's just in a way that he only trusts my mother. Like, they've been together happily for 43 years.
Oh, wow.
And which is just crazy to me to think about, because I'm just like, Jesus, like that they adore each other. Like they were in Vegas with us, and I have like the only pictures I took were like of them, like whispering sweet nothings to each other in a corner. Like,
aww.
I know. Right. But to have that, to have a team, like a teammate like that. And I had a little bit of a moment of I had a moment of extreme self-doubt while we were there, and I said something, and about 5 minutes later Paul looked at me and he goes, don't talk about my teammate like that.
Oh.
And I was just like, and they kind of bring you back to here. I don't know, they make everything, but I can't imagine though being a mother while doing this, because I feel like I'm failing everybody in my life all the time. I don't feel like I have enough for anybody ever. Like after I do this, what's left is so minimal, and then I feel shame and guilt. So I imagine being a mother and being an artist is just tough, but possible.
It's totally possible. And the thing is that when that human comes into your life, however that comes, everything else just kind of falls away, and you're like, why did I care about that even? Like, it's not important. Like, time just becomes your most precious commodity. Like, but then your own time you hold on to really dearly too. You're like, this is mine. And that's what your like art and your business will be. This is something that is like mine and that I have, and they can coexist with one another. And it's like, it's going from like black and white in life to color. That's the best way I can describe it.
So how old are all of them?
They're 8, 6, and 3. Yesterday, wow. I was having a bath with my 3-year-old, and he ran out of the tub onto the street. So I was chasing him in a robe on the street.
Wow.
So it's like complete chaos.
Do they inspire your work? Do they like?
Oh my gosh. When my first son was 2 to 3 years old and my second one was sleeping, we made a 44-piece portrait series, and it traveled to like 3 venues, and it was the weirdest art. Like, I swear no one else has done this ever. We had like ride-along toys and suckers tied to like 200 balloons and like swords for sword fighting and all the stuff that he made, like the backgrounds and the expressionistic. And then I would like oil paint eyes and a mouth and be like done that hard part. And he would come over it and paint over it. And I'd have to redo it. And it made it better. I don't know.
No, I feel like I totally understand that because all my friends' kids, all my nieces and nephews, because Paul and I have three teenage nieces, which let me tell you.
Holy shit.
I know, right? And we live in pretty close proximity to all of them. So we're very much active aunt and uncle in both sides of the family. But there's only two that are left that are little, and really only one. And she's five. So it's 5, 7, 14, 15, 16. Oh, 13. My nephew's 13. So a lot of teenagers. A lot of teenagers. My niece came and my brother's oldest is so cool. Watch, she was the first baby I ever really held. And I know how much I love her. And I can't even imagine loving my own child because of how much I love her, right? And my niece is an incredible artist. I'm talking like this little girl can draw anything she sees. Number one. Number two, she's just bizarre, has the most bizarre interest and is so completely unfazed by anything I throw at her. Like she did when she was 11, she was staying with me and I put her in contact with a friend of mine who's in the UK that makes music. She made the album art for him. He paid her like $400. And she just was like, whatever. I'm like, I was so concerned with being cool when I was that age. Like the thought of
I remember the thought that.
Right? Like I just was so nervous around everybody. What does he do? Is he doing something, your husband? Did you laugh at him or were you laughing at me?
No, I'm laughing at you. I completely agree. I don't like to think of myself as 14 or 11 or anything.
Oh, no.
It's just like That's such a hard time.
Oh my God, I don't think that people understand this. It's like, I think there's a lot of stuff going on, especially, I feel like a lot of our legislation these days centers around children. I think the one thing that people forget all the time is like how much we all cringe when we think about ourselves as children. I had a Hooba Stink sticker on the back of my car at one point. I'm super glad that's not there anymore. So the thought that whatever I'm doing with my niece, right, is going to impact her in the future is the coolest thing ever, which I would imagine.
Totally.
What's your husband talking about? Because I'm hearing.
Yeah, he answered his phone right next to me. I don't think he gets what podcasting is.
What's your
husband? He's answering, not only that, answering it on speakerphone.
What's your husband's name?
It's Charles, but we call him Carly because that's what they called his.
Okay, that's adorable. All the men in my family, weirdly enough, there's like five Charleses. And my nephew's Charlie.
And for some reason, like, that has happened. Like, people keep naming their kids Charles and Charlie. He must be cool and nice enough that people don't, like, cringe when they hear, you know, when you don't name your kids something because it was, like, a name that reminds you of a person. That was a terrible person.
My mom almost named me Randall. Because that's all the women in her family give their maiden name to one of their children, right? And mom was like, I knew a Randall in elementary school and he was an asshole, so I wasn't going to name you that.
That's so great.
And the other name was going to be Lenora, which was my other grandmother's name, who my mom and her did not get along. So my dad told her that my name would be Lenora, and my mom was like, are you out of your mind? No. Absolutely not.
I love your name. I think it's great. And I can see how your like business parents like influenced your whole what your journey has influenced. I have a question because I'm sure a lot of the listeners were curious and hopefully we can answer it quickly too.
Supposed to be an hour. Running.
Yeah, already.
Oh, shit. I'm so sorry. I didn't know.
No, that's cool. I'm happy to chat.
We're gonna have a part two.
I know. I would love to. I love talking to you.
Let's do the lightning round, rapid fire
answers. Yeah. So you work with a lot of designers. So how did that begin? Because a lot of people want to, and I know as like personally, there's no like magic, like, oh, you just do this, this, and this, and then you'll work with designers. Like it's just not a
I think I've had the good fortune to, Memphis is an amazing place, regardless of what you hear on the news or wherever else, Memphis is actually phenomenal. I have been working with interior designers here for a minute. I happen to be fortunate enough to have a very good friend whose name is Carmion Hamilton. And I don't know if you follow her, but if you don't, you should. Carmion is just a powerhouse. I met her probably 5 or 6 years ago. No, maybe longer than that it's been. And she was still working like an actual 9-to-5. She had yet to even branch out completely. But since becoming friends with her, I've watched her just take over the world. Basically, she has a show on HGTV. And then I've got another friend, David Quarles, another person in Memphis who is insane good, just who I have had the good fortune to know through a friend of mine who owns a clothing store, an amazing clothing store in Memphis. David worked at Stock and Bell for forever, and I met him there. And then he's branched out on his own. There is a real sense of we go a lot further together than alone kind of here. If that makes, yeah, you know, there's a real sense of community in Memphis. The other one that was has been amazing for my a friend of mine is Maggie Clark, and her sister happens to be Lucy Hale, which I don't know if you know who Lucy Hale is, but Lucy Hale is a very big celebrity. And
I'm just really terrible with names. And
I am too. And it's funny because I knew Maggie for a while. And
oh yeah,
that her sister was incredibly famous, but she gifted a piece of mine to her for Christmas, and now Lucy's an amazing client of mine. And then another friend of mine, Leslie Murphy, who's an insane, these are all Memphis-based designers, the craziest.
Wow.
Leslie got me on a project that was featured in Lux magazine. So like, there's just a lot, like I said, there's a lot of love in this city. There's a lot of, and maybe it has to do with the fact that we aren't in a place where cool and interesting things are taken for granted, right? We all recognize within each other a certain level of, you know, it's been amazing. Like Carmion has included me, not only my husband and I were actually, and she didn't have any decision in the, like her first show that she did for HGTV, which was Reno My Rental. Like she did not pick us. We submitted, she had no clue. So just to dissuade anybody from thinking there was any nepotism or whatever there. But we were on that show. She put my artwork, I got to put my own artwork in my kitchen. Now that she has another show, I'm putting artwork in another space for her. She also she did Apartment Therapy Small Cool in New York. My work was featured there with her. I mean, she's been really pretty instrumental in taking me with her a lot of spaces. It's just sort of like there's just a lot of love here, I'd say, which is something I recognize that a lot of people don't think they have. But I think that most cities, just because you're not in a city that you think is a, like, known for its, you know, cultural, like, hub, which we have a ton of culture here, but not a lot of, like, what would most people would assume is a lot of art. And we do, and I think most cities do. I just think it's a matter of people spending time in their own communities, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I've been here since 2009, and everybody always asks me why I don't leave. I don't leave because everybody leaves. And at some point in time, I got to settle somewhere. And I'm sure shit not going to settle somewhere where I'm a dime a dozen.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. No, it's true. You collaborate with the creatives that are around you. It's the most powerful thing you can do. Everyone's reaching out here. But you have to focus on what you have. I live in a town with 30,000 people. And
my husband and I are getting ready to move. Yeah. We're getting ready to move back to my hometown, we think. And there's about 30,000 people there, and it's in Mississippi. So it's like, but
we can do this anywhere.
I want to live someplace where I can like have some privacy and some land. I want to live in the middle.
Yes.
Of all I want. So real quick, I know that it just hit 1 hour that we've been together, but I was going to show you this before. Well, number one, here, let me flip you around. You're going to have to do editing. I apologize for that. How do I, let's see, switch camera. Boom. So this is my studio. I'll just walk you in.
Oh my gosh.
So flat files and really shit storage that's happening over there. And then this is Erin's space where she does all the packaging and all the shipping and things. Oh, why is this reversed?
Oh, that's a nice big space.
Oh, it's huge. So one of the other things that I've been, so I'm dyslexic and it affects my motor skills, and the camera is flipped as in like flipped. Oh, let me see. Hold on. Can I do that? Wait. What the hell? That's bizarre. Wait. Oh, it did it. No, it didn't. Shit. Okay. So I got printers and that was an amazing addition. But this is the thing that I've been working on and I'm dead to present somewhere. This is a scale model. Oh, wait. God. Other way.
Oh, wow. I love that.
Right?
So cool.
And another thing.
What is that on?
Oh, it's just foam board at the moment. This is my wall of stuff that is like things that I'm working on for like a larger idea. But I don't really, again, don't show many people. Same thing with this piece. I put this one up, but I don't really, it's not something I've been showing to people. It's like a more sculptural version of my drawings.
And then the other, okay, I see that. Yeah.
And then the other one would be like paintings like these that are very big and very different and not a lot of people have any interest in. We also, we've got a wood shop.
Are my favorite kind of paintings. Like personally, like when it's like less is more and they're really like raw. Like
wood shop, this belongs to my cousin's, my husband's older cousin. He opened, set up a wood shop in there, which has been awesome. And then we have a little kitchen in this. I call it the break room as a joke because it's like, you know, not a break room at all.
Oh, I love those chairs.
Ta-da.
Oh, so, beautiful.
That's the studio space. What is happening here? And why does this not let me, I have no clue what I'm doing. This is the first time I've ever used this. Wait, how do I flip the camera again? I feel like my mom suddenly. I'm sorry. I'm like literally really struggling here. I flipped it once. Now it only has it. So I'm just, okay, shit. So sad.
Well, I love that you have like a nice window there too.
Boom.
That's great. I did it. Nice.
So there you go. Ta-da. I'm sorry. It's 3 minutes.
No, past. It's okay. I just messaged the next, I'm on someone else's podcast. And he said, come in 15 minutes. It's fine. So we're good. Oh. I do have a final by the, what did you call it? The no nuts policy friend with the red. So this is sponsored by her business firm, Red Bicycle Communications. She also, it wasn't a conscious decision. It's just, she's like, we tried really hard and it just didn't happen. It wasn't working. And so this is what works.
There's an energy that's there. There's a power dynamic that exists without you, even through the, it's not that it's.
She started it from scratch. And I think a lot of people maybe, you know, have trouble like swallowing that, you know?
I do know.
Yeah, which we can talk about in our second podcast.
We're going to have to do that because I should have told you that this is another reason why I was hoping that I was like, please say that she has like pre-prepared questions because I know how I am. And if Erin is not on the other side of me doing this to like.
That's what my podcast is. It's you. It's like, I hope you showed up authentically. And I think you did.
If I did, God help us if there's a more authentic version.
Okay, so the final question is, can you describe your ideal, like, perfect day in your life?
Giant sketchbook, amazing cocktail, my husband, and a beach. Done.
Perfect.
Perfect Great. Day. I would live that day on repeat if I could. It's nothing better. It's one of the things that I love to do the most is to just him and I have to go to a beach and let me sit and draw because he will sit and listen to music while I draw and we don't have to say a word and he doesn't need to be entertained and I can just exist. Done.
Perfect. Okay. Well, we'll chat soon. It was very nice to meet you.
You too, and, love. I feel like we're new fast friends.
Yes, please. I knew that from the moment you messaged me back and I heard your voice.
what was it, a boot? That was what I heard. Yeah. I was like, this girl is Canadian.
Yeah. So I was like, you're like, I don't think you want me on your record. You said something like, I was like, I do want to talk to you so badly, actually.
Well, I hope it didn't disappoint.
No.
And it's let's perfect. Do it soon. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Have a great weekend.
And tell your husband to lay off the speakerphone calls.
Yeah, I usually go in studio, so no one sees me. Like, it's like a basement built-in studio, so I like close the doors and everyone knows not to disturb. But I was like, I love the light in my
kitchen. Was joking because my husband is usually in he has an office here too, and he's usually like
drilling something in the background.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, hey, look, I will speak to you hopefully soon, and let's hope that people don't burn my house down after we watch this.
They won't. Okay, bye, all right, see ya.
If you're looking for some time for yourself to relax, release, and unwind, Oasis has the perfect space for you. They offer yoga and spin classes of all levels. Whether you are a beginner or advanced student, Oasis thrives on accommodating all aspects of the practice. Let their serene environment and gracious staff help you in your journey of peace, healing, and strength. Sign up online at www.oasishotyogastudio.com or by downloading the Oasis Hot Yoga Studio app. Feel like yourself. You deserve it.